Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Connie Strassheim, who has written a book called Defeat Cancer, 15 Doctors of Integrative and Naturopathic Medicine Tell You How. Connie has been on the show before for insights into Lyme's disease, and she had a chronic illness of Lyme's that led her on an investigative journey for intracellular infections, and that which is very difficult to treat sometimes, and then on to cancer, another chronic disease that is a little scarier for people when they get that diagnosis. But these 15 doctors that are featured in her book, Defeat Cancer, give us really a lot of information about why cancer occurs, what we can do about it, what effective treatments there are out there, as well as what you need to do to make cancer more of a chronic disease rather than acute disease, and often remission of even stage 3 and 4 cancers if the cause of the cancer can be treated. Welcome, Connie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Kolb. It's great to be here again.
Well, I would like you to give a little bit of your background to our listening audience, and especially how you became interested in cancer. I assume it's because many of these doctors were treating Lyme's disease and other difficult intracellular chronic fatiguing illnesses, and then you figured out that they were treating cancer as well. Is that right?
Well, kind of. Basically, what happened was I got sick with chronic Lyme disease, and there wasn't a lot of good information out there when I got diagnosed. And so I ended up looking, doing, you know, massive investigation for doctors that knew how to treat chronic Lyme. And when I found them, I asked them if they'd like to share their information in a book so that other people could benefit from that, because there really just wasn't a lot of good information out there at that time. And that concept was so successful that I just thought, you know, I had lost some friends and family members to cancer, and I knew that the conventional medical approach was not really helping people that much. And so I thought, wow, you know, the Lyme book was so successful, it helped so many people. I bet you I can do the same with the cancer book and find doctors that really know how to treat it and who can help people. And sure enough, that was true. And yes, some of the doctors that I know who treat Lyme also treat cancer. And so, you know, there was that overlap.
Well, certainly cancer is much more scary than almost any other illness when the patient initially receives their diagnosis. And that's because, and the fear and the anxiety associated with the diagnosis actually harm the patient's healing process. And I think that's really good. Well described in the book by some of the doctors. So managing that is very, very important.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the things that are associated with cancer. I think most people understand that radiation is. I mean, everybody's heard of Chernobyl, and almost anybody who's exposed to radiation will get cancer. That's because it's breaking down the DNA and the repair mechanisms of DNA. But what a lot of people don't understand is that there's a lot of medical radiation that probably could be avoided. And even the FDA has addressed this, saying that many patients are getting way too much radiation, getting CAT scans way too often. Digital mammograms have a lot of radiation. And, you know, my interest in silicone breast implants, the silicone implant actually causes the radiation to go back into the breast, and there's peer-reviewed articles in radiology showing that we need to decrease the dose of the X-ray in patients with silicone breast implants, and yet nobody does that. So it's very, very interesting that medical radiation may actually be one of the, you know, one of the causes. But there. Would you like to address some of the things that the doctors together say are common causes of cancer?
Let's see. What was that last part you were saying, Dr. Cole?
Oh,
cut out for just a minute there.
I wanted to discuss some of the things that they're saying are common causes of cancer. Like, like one of some of the things are like inflammation, emotional trauma. You know,
one thing
that is not mentioned in here, but I had a conversation. I had a conversation with Burton Goldberg the other day, and I was telling him that half of my patients with breast cancer have geopathic stress. And he said, oh, no, Susan, 75% of cancer patients have geopathic stress. Now, that's something that none of the doctors mentioned, but if that's true and 75% of cancer patients have geopathic stress, which is really simple to reverse, we really need to know that. I mean, that's what Burton Goldberg's saying, and he's one of the experts in terms of gathering information about cancer.
Well, I definitely think that the electromagnetic, the radiation factor is really an important one. And obviously we're bombarded with electromagnetic fields from a multitude of sources. And then, as you say, there's geopathic stress. I don't know if there are any studies that show, you know, how much geopathic stress is a factor, but there is some evidence, at least, you know, anecdotally and in doctors' experiences with their patients, that being on a geopathic field, especially when you're sleeping, can be detrimental to your health. And these are like fault lines created by underground streams, you know, metal veins, just a, you know, a variety of different things. And you'll know that you're on one if you're, if you, for instance, if you get tired, you know, sitting in one place in, let's say, your office or your bedroom, than if you're sitting in another location. And it's funny because Dr. Cowden and I wrote a book, and it's called Create a Toxin-Free Body and Home. And in that, Dr. Cowden says there's some simple things you can do to find out whether you're on a geopathic field. And one of those, he says, is, you know, if you have a cat or a dog, he said, cats will sleep over geopathic fields, but dogs won't. And so that's kind of, you know, one thing. And he said babies also, if they're laid, if you lay a baby on a geopathic field, the baby will tend to roll off that area. And and of course these are like the informal ways of trying to figure that out, but there and but there is really sophisticated equipment that they use to detect those fields. And so if you can find someone that has, it's called a, I'm not even sure I'm going to pronounce this right, geomagnetometer, then you know, they can measure those fields. And I'm not sure how you find, some building biologists in the United States might do that, and there's an organization that, you know, where you can find a building biologist in the town in which you live. There are probably more of those in the big cities than the small towns at that point. But yeah, that can be one factor in what causes cancer among many, many others, many other types of toxins.
You know, Dr. Cowden came here and gave an all-day course and taught us how to check for geopathic stress very cheaply, because building biologists cost about $300, and that's just to test the muscle strength when the patient thinks about either where they sleep or where they spend a lot of time, like a desk, or if you watch TV a lot, sitting in that chair. And then whenever you think about being there, you'll be very weak, but if you just say move over to the other side of the bed, and you think about being over there, they're strong as a rock. So you can diagnose this with applied kinesiology for no money whatsoever, other than just having somebody press on your arm. And I think everybody should check out whether or not they have geopathic stress, since if Burton is right and 70%+ of cancer patients are being affected by a geopathic stress thing that's so easy to correct, we need to tell all cancer patients that that's a factor. But, you know, I've had a cancer clinic here since 1999, and we do test causation, because causation is very important to treat. If if you have a viral infection, a lot of viral infections and mildew exposures lead to leukemia. If you don't treat the underlying infection, the cancer will recur, in our experience. So we treat the viruses, we treat fungus, we treat parasites, we treat you know, viruses and intracellular infections, all of which can be associated with T-cell immunity problems, and also causation, direct causation. Some funguses produce a aflatoxin that causes liver cancer, for example. Some, there's a model of gastric cancer produced by parasites. You know, that we know that if we give animals and humans certain parasites, they get gastric cancer. Gastric cancer is also associated with H. pylori, which is a bacteria. So chronic inflammation can occur from any infection. And it just makes sense to me that you've got to treat the underlying chronic inflammation. And many of your doctors say that in this book, that treating the cause is important.
Absolutely. Well, and so you know, Dr. Cole, that's a good point. That's really a good point, because there really are just so many things that can cause cancer, and you want to get to the root causes. And they've done studies that show that, you know, at least 3/4 of cancers are caused by environmental factors. And you know that because 100 years ago, there weren't nearly as many people diagnosed with cancer. And so, you know, and that's not the whole thing. I mean, they've also found that emotions and things can play a role. But for the most part, you know, we're just awash in a sea of toxins. And newborn babies today are born with over 200 chemical toxins in their bodies, probably a lot more. And so, you know, getting those toxins removed, whether you're talking about the infections or you're talking about plastics or mold, you know, all the doctors I interview talk about how important it is to have a whole body approach. And I've interviewed many, many dozens of cancer doctors, and it's really just been a great education for me.
Well, some of your doctors in this book have expressed the observation that we've had here at our cancer center is that people are showing up with cancer at 17 years of age, you know, with pancreatic cancer, 24 with metastatic breast cancer. And I had one patient that came here from out of state who had stage 3 cancer, breast cancer, at 23. And we put her on some relatively inexpensive programs. Dr. Rath's program was one of the things I used. I used some other things, SEACT and some of the other things that are not real expensive, because we don't really do a lot of IV therapies here, because most people are from out of state. So, you know, we're not going to keep them here for a long time. But she wrote me about 5 years later saying that she had no evidence of disease on PET scan, and was it okay for her to have a baby? So, you know, I mean, we see stage 3 and 4 cancer going away. And and we're not doing nearly as much as some of the doctors in here are doing, you know, with insulin potentiation therapies and blood irradiation and ultraviolet treatment of the blood and all these really whole body hyperthermia. These are fabulous cancer treatments, but they're very expensive. Sometimes, or their equipment is very expensive, or if you do them, the medical board likes to come visit you, or the FDA likes to come visit you, so we don't do them here. But, you know, you have to be kind of protected to do some of those therapies, like be in Mexico, for example. But the thing I really like about your book is that you ask the same questions. You talk about, well, you talk about a little bit about their clinic and their biography, but then you go on to talk about what they think causes cancer, their different treatment approaches, how friends and family can help their loved ones with cancer, ineffective and dangerous cancer treatments, which I love here because radiation and regular chemotherapy for some patients is listed by almost everybody, inexpensive cancer treatments, insurance coverage for treatments, which is very interesting, and roadblocks to healing. And I think that comparing the doctor's answers, because you have 15 different doctors, is really important, because what you see in almost every chapter is what is going to be the truth, because these people have observed thousands of cancer patients. So this is really it's a great book.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think it's definitely helped a lot of people, because you get all these, you know, because there's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all approach, and some people might be more drawn to one type of therapy over another or find it more appropriate for what they're dealing with. You know, and because not everyone needs IPT or hyperthermia. No, one person might benefit from that more than another. Right. But, yeah, you can, you know, when you have a bunch of doctors together, you can compare and contrast, you know, where are the similarities among what they do, what are the differences, and you can draw some conclusions based on that. You know, if all the doctors say sugar's bad for you, then, you know, that pretty much solidifies, well, you don't want to eat sugar. But anyway, yeah, they all really, really have great approaches, just, you know, varying in what they do.
Now, your chapter one starts up with Brzezinski, who's in Texas. You want to talk a little bit about what he found out about anti-neoplastins in terms of cancer?
Yeah, so Dr. Brzezinski is pretty well known. He's actually been persecuted pretty heavily by the FDA, but he has won every one of his cases because he discovered a really novel therapy, and that was that if he could manipulate the person's genetic genes, the tumor suppressor genes, and then those genes that turn on the body's defenses and turn off, he discovered ways to turn off the tumor promoter genes and turn on the body's genes that would fight the cancer, and he created these things called anti-neoplastins, which do exactly that, and they have been really effective for treating a wide variety of cancers that, you know, and especially after conventional medicine has failed people, and that's what's really interesting about what he does is that, you know, the FDA allows him to treat patients, but only after they fail chemo and radiation, and so he gets patients in the weakest of conditions. And he's often able to even reverse their cancer with the anti-neoplastins.
And he's got the best history of any doctor treating brain cancer, especially gliomas of the brainstem. You know, malignant tumors of the brainstem kill people very quickly because there's very little room for expansion in that area before you quit breathing. He has the best track record of anybody in the world doing that.
Yeah, and that's really important, Dr. Kolb, today, especially because there are a lot of people getting brain cancer because of cell phone use and, you know, even kids. I'm writing a cancer book right now, actually, another one for a doctor. I'm ghosting the book, and, you know, and she talks about that, how she says that there are little kids coming in with brain tumors now and because of cell phone use. And so, you know, it's nice that there are doctors out there like Brzezinski that have really good success with different types of brain cancer.
Let's talk about that for a minute because I've got some suggestions for that are pretty unique. You know, Dr. Norm Shealy, I'm sure you've heard of him, neurosurgeon and expert in electromagnetic medicine. He tested all of the cell phone devices out there that you put on your cell phone that help modulate the signals so they're less dangerous. And he said that the best one was the Q-Link. And it's about $30 or $40. I mean, it's not very expensive. And it goes right on your phone. And you can also wear a Q-Link around your neck if you want to protect your thymus from, you know, things like cell tower things if you live close to that. But I would recommend everybody put a Q-Link on their cell phone and also try to get the cell phone away from your head. We interviewed Dr. Carlo, who was doing, I think he did $20 million worth of research for the cell phone companies, and when he found out the mechanism by which cell phones do cause not just brain cancer, but eye tumors and parotid tumors and other tumors in the area of the cell phone, it's by increasing free radicals. So one of the things you can do is take high-dose melatonin. And some of my patients muscle test for like even up to 10 milligrams of melatonin, which, by the way, is mentioned in Defeat Cancer, is really good for a lot of cancers because high free radicals, especially in the brain, are what prevent the toxins from being, you know, eliminated. And then that is associated with the cancers, so especially neuroepithelial malignancies. Now, Dr. Carlo refused to not publish this research, and he ended up having his house burnt down, and he fled to another country and wrote the book that I interviewed him on. So, you know, just know that he was probably onto something because of what happened.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you can tell when the whistleblowers start getting close to the truth because they either they go after him legally or they go after their lives. And a lot of these doctors have had, you know, frank assassination attempts. So basically, I interview all the whistleblowers, so they share with me their stories. But essentially, you know, you got to get the cell phone away from your head or your child's head. you need to put something on it. There are even cell phones that are made specifically for decreased radiation. Dr. Gould here in the clinic introduced me to that. I don't have that. I mean, I've got the regular iPhone, but there are phones that are made that are shielded better than the iPhone are. And but everybody who uses a cell phone, if you have, you should muscle test for how much melatonin to take, because taking melatonin at night will help reverse the free radicals, and that is the cause of the tumors, according to Dr. Carlo. So
yeah, and that's a good, that's a really good point, Dr. Cold. And they, you know, and it has anti-cancer effects upon really a lot of types of cancer. But I wanted to just tag on to what you're saying about the cell phones, which is that I have found personally that even like using a headset on your computer is not a good thing. I have a, you know, I have a number of different meters that I use to measure the electromagnetic fields in my environment, and cordless phones and, like, you know, using a headset with your computer can also be problematic, and people respond differently to different types of frequencies. So, you know, for instance, I found that a headset on a computer for me is more problematic than a cell phone, which, and so, you know, I'll just, what I like to tell people is don't use cordless phones if you can help it. Get a corded phone, use a landline, and as you said, use your cell phone on speaker mode. And if you can get good reception, just, you know, get a computer where you can just talk into the computer and you don't have to wear a headset, because, you know, and just doing all those things can really cut down on the amount of radiation that you're exposed to. But that's interesting what you said about the lower radiation cell phones. I mean, that's really a fantastic idea.
And then the other thing that I want to warn people about is Bluetooth. If you walk around with that Bluetooth on your ear all day, you are exposing yourself to the type of radio frequency that can cause the tumors of the nerve specifically. So you don't want a tumor of your the nerve that goes to your hearing and your balance, because that has to be cut out. It can be a benign tumor, but once it's cut out, then you definitely have, well, you don't have any hearing on that side, and you can have balance problems. So, you know, you need to know that Bluetooths are always on, so that field of energy is always causing problems with free radicals as long as you have it on. So that's not a good idea.
No, that's a good point, because I think there's a myth out there, Dr. Kolb, that the Bluetooth is safer, and I'm not sure how people got that idea.
It isn't.
But, you know.
Well,
yeah, but it's not.
Might not. Yeah, it might not cause so many neuroepithelial malignancies, but it's like beaming it right toward that nerve, so it's concentrating it right in one area. And there's other tumors. Parotid tumors are increased, and eye tumors. Now, I have a, and I'm sure many people do, and they may not even know it, I have a little nevus in my retina, okay? And I was using the Kindle a lot to listen to books, and I was doing it in the car, and I just have it up near my head, you know, because the voice was soft.
Yeah.
I was listening to the voice, reading the book. And then that tumor started to grow. My eye doctor found it. And so that's how I figured out how these electronic devices were causing problems, because they were worried that my pigmented lesion in my retina was trying to turn into melanoma. And
melanoma
is one of the things that can happen. So, you know, if you have something just like a mole, and one of my patients who was happened to be black had a mole, and he wore the cell phone right over it, and statistically, black people do not get melanoma. And his turned into melanoma. And he said, he came in saying, the cell phone did this because I wore the cell phone right over the mole. So if you have a mole, don't put your cell phone right over it, okay?
No.
Because that's not good.
No.
Okay.
Good to know.
So, yeah, it is. It's good to know that these electromagnetic devices are very intermittent in what they're doing. And if the cell phone gets hot, I guess that's because it doesn't have good reception, then there's more danger, according to the experts that I've interviewed. But so electromagnetic fields or electromagnetic causes of cancer can be treated, and Dr. Cowden just recommends turning off the breaker to your bedroom at night which is an interesting thing to do. Or if it's really bad with a cell phone tower in your neighborhood, you can buy for about $1,000 a shield to go over your bed, you know, that just blocks out all electromagnetic radiation. So when you sleep,
right.
you don't get you get nothing. And he had you know, in his lecture, he was telling us about that. So there are things to do for almost any electromagnetic exposure you may have that's increasing your risk of cancer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Dr. Kolb, I just want to mention one thing that I found out fairly recently, which is that, you know, there's a lot of the Faraday cage is really, really good for the high frequency fields, but there's also a lot of energy that comes out of the wall wiring, and especially mm-hmm. because through smart meters, because people think, well, the smart meter projects energy just off the meter itself, but it also comes in through the wall wiring. And mm-hmm. I actually had a really bad issue with insomnia, and what I found was if I plug Graham Stetzer filters into the wall, and they're these little filters, they're about $30 each, you plug them into the wall, mm-hmm. they block the radiation that was coming off the smart meter. And so, you know, if you've got a typical size house, you may need to buy 20 of these, but if you want to just protect yourself in your bedroom, you can put some in there, and then but turning mm-hmm. off your circuit breakers at night, as you mentioned, can help. And I think that's a new source of fairly new source of electromagnetic energy that is causing sleep disturbances in a lot of people. And, you know, because the smart meter thing is a new thing, and people don't know that energy comes in through the walls, you know, not just off the meter itself. So that's
There are devices you can put on the smart meter itself, and then in some states you can actually pay a fee every month not to have the smart meter.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, they come out and read the meter. I think you just need to test. We use, again, applied kinesiology, or there's doctors that use the Zyto machine, like Dr. Cowden uses Zyto. There's other test methods that you can use to determine which of these are, you know, an issue for you personally. Because not everybody's affected by the smart meter.
That's true.
But some people's lives are totally disrupted by the smart meter. And some people, I believe, got cancer because of the smart meter, because that's what
mm-hmm.
they're testing for. They're testing for that that's the main thing that caused their
mm-hmm.
cancer. So, you know, everybody's an individual. Just like every doctor in this book says, we don't treat the cancer, we treat the patient with the cancer, you know, because people have different different weaknesses, different strengths. You know, somebody might eat some bad bread that has mold in it and get liver cancer. I mean, we've seen that. We've seen that happen. So
mm-hmm.
think about it. I mean, the main cause of their cancer was a mold in bread they ate. So
amazing.
Well, it is amazing, but other patients have some other total cause. I wanted to talk a little bit about Dr. Hammer's work, because it's mentioned in your book, and I think it's so important for people to understand the emotional cause of cancer. By far, most primary mm-hmm. cancers, in my experience, have an emotional component. Now, recurrent cancers often don't, because at least in this clinic, we clear the emotional things first. So, and often they don't come back. I'll talk a little bit about breast cancer. Dr. Hammer had his son brutally murdered, and within 6 months he developed testicular cancer, and his wife developed breast cancer. And specifically, if the woman is right-handed, if someone she nurtures is injured or gets sick or dies or whatever, even a pet, then she can develop right-sided breast cancer pretty quickly. On the other hand, if someone who's supposed to protect and nurture her betrays her, she'll develop left-sided cancer. And I haven't seen anything different in 20 years of doing cancer here. So, and in probably hundreds of cases, that's always been true. So there is a intelligence in terms of what, when we get an emotional trauma, what part of the body it goes to. And I think traditional Chinese medicine supports that. So basically, like kidney cancer is always relationship issues, usually the victim of a relationship. In other words, it's not the person that's being the victimizer in the relationship, it's the victim. The person who's being victimized that gets the kidney cancer. And then lung cancers are interesting. One of your doctors says that adenocarcinoma of the lung is when people are have a life-threatening situation, like an assassination situation. Sometimes when they're told they have cancer, they might develop lung tumors because they're worried they're going to die. I mean, extreme fear of dying. And the other things that we find is lung cancer can occur because people are not truthful. People who are chronic liars lower the energy in the throat chakra, and then can, because the lungs are connected to that chakra, can develop lung cancer. And the caveat on that is especially if they smoke or have a history of smoking, because that's toxic chemical, okay?
Yeah.
So these things are additive. You have a toxic chemical situation, carcinogens, we know that they're in the cigarette smoke, and then you lie on top of it, you bring the energy of the lungs down even more, then you can manifest lung cancer. And not all patients with lung cancer are liars. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that is one of the things that has been determined when people study this thing. And it probably is a particular type of lung cancer, and it probably is not adeno. I think this doctor is right, that adeno is going to be a different causation than squamous cell will be.
Yeah. And it's interesting because obviously the Chinese discovered long ago that we harbor emotions in different parts of our body, and I don't think it's always a cut and dry issue. But it's interesting how you found that there are these patterns that certain types of cancer manifest in particular organs, and especially when it's something that's repressed. You know, they say that if you have a conflict. And I think Homer said something about this as well, that if you can process that on a conscious level and don't let it get down into the unconscious or the subconscious,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's less of a chance that it's going to develop into a cancer. And so they find that, you know, people typically get cancers when they repress things. And so, you know, just because you have something really difficult happen to you doesn't mean that you have to be a victim of that, but you don't want to stuff it away either. And so I think that's really crucial, is how do you handle the conflict? And anyway, that's what I've learned.
Very true. And there's a cancer personality, and that's of the nice person, the person that doesn't get angry. You know, the person that gets angry gets heart disease, but the person that doesn't get angry, the person that represses these things, gets cancer. I mean, that's typical over thousands and thousands of patients being observed by doctors who are looking at this. So, you know, what I would say is that people who are less likely to express their emotions because they're more intellectual, more, you know, based in the mental realm, do have a higher risk if they have a trauma. And, you know, they may, and you're right, they suppress it right down into the subconscious because it's too disruptive to their lives. You know, they might be, you know, they might have very important responsibilities in their life. As a surgeon, I can't let the things that are bothering me emotionally affect me during the time I'm doing surgery, obviously. So I'm gonna tend, because I'm mentally, not emotionally based, I'm gonna tend to stuff those down because I just simply cannot allow it, you know. And I'm good at stuffing things down. But then I also realize, because I've been studying this so long, that you do have to release them. You have to do active, and there are releasing techniques. My spiritual father was Doc Linwald, and he was the founder of a lot of releasing techniques. And you know what he told me on a number of occasions, and I saw personally? He says, cancer is easy. All you have to do is release the emotion, and the cancer goes away. He saw hundreds of patients, even with stage 3 and 4 cancers, after the releasing work, the cancers just went away. We're not talking about, you know, all the other things that, I mean, he didn't detox them. He didn't put them on nutritional IVs. He didn't give them anti-cancer therapies. He just released the toxic emotion.
Yeah, isn't that something? You can have a spontaneous remission with that. Well, and I would just tag on to what you're saying. You know, a lot of us have that kind of a lifestyle where you can't just, you know, go around and release your emotions during the day. But, you know, I found, for instance, it's helpful if you have a little space, if you can set aside a little time in your day, you know, and go pray and go meditate. And, you know, for me, that involves expressing my emotions to God, you know, to my creator, because mm-hmm. that in that way, at least, you know, it's like you say, maybe I can't release my emotions to anyone around me, but you can still process them through journaling, through, you know, through prayer, through meditation. And so,
yeah,
anyway.
I think Qigong is so effective in getting rid of cancer, because I think it helps one through the motions and the practice of Qigong to release these emotions. I think that Qigong is something to really look into.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to tag on to what you're saying about
mm-hmm.
Qigong, because there's a hospital in I believe it's in China, and it's like they call it the mm-hmm. largest medicine-less hospital in the world, and people go there, and they're literally thousands of people there at any one time, and they do Qigong, but they have a lot of spontaneous remission, because there are a lot of people just, you know, they're together basically in a community helping each other to get well through Qigong. And so anyway, it's a pretty famous hospital. I can't remember the name of it, but if you were to Google it,
if you go to Greg Braden's work, if you look up Greg Braden's work, he was the one that actually discovered it. I interviewed Greg on the show many times, but he discovered it because he was watching a video. This woman with bladder cancer had a tumor of a certain size in her bladder. I think it was either bladder or uterus, but I think it was bladder. And there were five Qigong masters surrounding her, and they were chanting. And what they were chanting was the energy of, it wasn't in English, obviously, but it meant already gone, already gone,
wow.
already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they did that, and you have to understand that the chant sets up a vibration. And so they
mm-hmm.
had an ultrasound on the tumor, and within 3 minutes, the tumor had totally disappeared.
Wow.
You
wow.
saw it on the ultrasound disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So... you see, you know, we are not made of physical matter, just physical matter. We are actually vibrational. So the
right.
tumor is a condensed vibration of chaotic energy. But if you have five Qigong masters who can override that energy, within 3 minutes, the tumor can go away.
Right, because
right
I
before
thought
your
the
eyes.
Earth have an energy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's why Qigong is so effective, because it utilizes the energies that these Qigong masters were using, and basically that is probably what's behind a lot of spontaneous remission, is that the energetic signals that are being used to congeal those tumor energies are reversed by whatever, releasing techniques, you know, chanting, meditation techniques, or whatever. I mean, whatever energetic things occur, we probably don't even understand exactly what's going on in some of the cases. I had a friend who was in my meditation group, and at the age of 36, she had stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. And in fact, one of the tumors was perforating her intestine, and I think it was her stomach, and she was on the schedule for surgery because she was getting really bad side effects from this tumor perforating her gut. And she had an energy, and this is always the same. I've had a lot of patients have spontaneous remission experiences, and it's always the same. An energy at the top of their crown, it's an electromagnetic energy that flows through them to their feet. And then by the time the energy gets to their feet, there's no more tumors anywhere in their body. So she woke up, she had this energy flow through her, and then she had no more tumors, you know, because she had some tumors that you could feel in her breast and in her other places. They were gone. So she called her surgeon in before surgery, and she was hungry, too, and she was, you know, she wouldn't have been hungry if she was still sick.
Yeah.
So she said to him, something happened last night. I want you to look at me before I go down to surgery. And she said he took her hand, and he said, my dear, you had a miracle. And she was in my meditation group, and basically never had any recurrence again. So here's somebody who did nothing. I mean, she was having chemo. She was going to have surgery. She had stage 4 disease. She had this energy flow through her, and then, bam, she had no disease. So obviously, whatever that energy is that's involved in spontaneous remission, which we've since investigated, it's a fifth-dimensional energy. It really goes through the body and kicks out anything causing the cancer. And within 3 minutes, I mean, or within 2 minutes, just like the Qigong masters did. And they were probably bringing in energy in, too. I mean, they're probably bringing in a higher dimensional energy through their practices. So there is some evidence, at least for spontaneous remission or very fast remission, that is actually energetic, and it could possibly be reproduced if we could understand it.
Well, yeah, and you have the, you know, there's in science that the all every chemical reaction in the body is preceded by an energetic one, and so you know that tells you that the energy drives the chemistry, and you know probably somewhat, you know, it's put somewhat circular, but yeah, it's like you're saying, you know, if you can find that energy that the body needs, and when the energy of the body gets balanced, then you can have those spontaneous remissions. And it's interesting how they have found, for instance, that there are energies that correlate with emotions. Like, you know, I had a friend say that she found that the Borrelia organism involved in Lyme disease is the same frequency as the energy of hopelessness, the emotion of hopelessness. Mm-hmm. And you often find hopelessness together with, you know, Lyme. And so it's kind of interesting because you think, well, if somehow you can, you know, plug in the right emotions into your body, then those frequencies of the microbes or the cancer can't stay there because they don't have the emotions to resonate with them anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that very few traditional doctors and even some integrative doctors don't really appreciate how powerful emotions are in creating health or disease. That, you know, that's why a lot of doctors just can't wrap their head around how spiritual practices, yoga, qigong, meditation, any of the spiritual practices that balance the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. Although I will say some of your doctors in this book have a real good understanding of it. I was impressed at what they were saying. But that will completely change the energetic. And what I do is I imagine in my mind this energy coming in through the chakras, then into the acupuncture meridian system, then into the nerves and endocrine system, and then finally back into the tissue. I mean, I can kind of see it in my mind because when I see somebody with cancer, I can see where the disruption of the energy is, which chakra, which part of the body. So and you can feel it too. If you do pendulum work, you can feel the chakras always backwards, always when someone has cancer that's associated with it. Yeah, and Carolyn May said that too. You know, she was a medical intuitive who always said that there was disruption of the chakra prior, often years prior to the cancer forming. So obviously it's an energetic problem, and that's why emotions, because they can drop the energy very quickly in an organ. Say your husband cheats on you or your uncle sexually abuses you. Well, right away, your that left breast, if you're right-handed, that left breast is just going to, the energy in that breast is just going to go down. And it can be measured on some of the machines that the doctors in your book have. I mean, I don't have these machines, but Dr. Cowden does, and some of the other doctors in the book have these machines. And so they can measure what will raise the energy. That was one of the things in the book. They say there's a tumor in the lung, but they can tell what would raise the energy of that part of the lung. You know, what supplement or drug or whatever, you know, whatever would raise the energy can be tested as well. So I think we just have to, you know, take medicine a step further, you know, out of the 18th century where it is now with cancer, and put it forward into the future where we really understand it's an energetic disease.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I personally believe that you will never cure cancer by killing the cancer cells. You will only cure cancer, I mean, in every single case, you will cure cancer if you can raise the energy within the organ. Because it can't exist. It's just like that ultrasound of the bladder tumor. It cannot exist if the energy of the organs increased. It just disappears within 3 months. It's so amazing.
That it really is, Dr. Colvin. The other thing is just even getting out of the mentality that cancer is a disease of a body part. And, you know, when you
right.
if you just get rid of the tumor, then you're going to be fine, because cancer is a disease of the whole person. It reflects an energetic imbalance, an imbalance in the inner terrain of the entire person. And
mm-hmm.
and I think that is where, you know, conventional medicine needs a big paradigm shift, and to begin treating the person treating those functional imbalances, because, you know, it's like even if they could remove every cancer cell, which they really, you know, they can't. But if they could, you still, unless you correct that imbalance, then you still have a terrain that's hospitable to disease. And so that what you really want to correct is that terrain. And like you said, restore mm-hmm. the balance to the organ.
Yeah, the idea of the biological terrain really was important to me when I started studying cancer. You know, it's the ground that cancer grows in. One of my patients worked in a, she was a, she, this is a fascinating story. She was a secretary in a chemical plant, and she came to me for cancer of the vulva. I operated on it, of course, and she did fine. Then she had basal cell. Then she had squamous cell. Then she had kidney cancer. Then she had lung cancer. Then she had colon cancer. Now, but she did fine with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then the
mm-hmm.
last thing she had was interesting. She developed some metastatic disease in her lungs, and of course, nobody knew what they were from because she'd had so many different cancers. So, but she told me something. She said, "I am never going to die of cancer." I will not die of cancer. So she went in to do a fine needle biopsy at a local hospital, and while she was under anesthesia, she threw a massive blood clot and died on the table. So she didn't die of cancer.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
That is interesting.
But you know what kind of cancer that was? Melanoma.
What's that? Oh, wow.
Melanoma. I mean, I was keeping such a close eye on her. I don't know where the melanoma came from. I mean,
wow.
It might have been in her retina, you know, like I had. I didn't,
mm-hmm.
that was before
mm-hmm.
I knew about mine. It might have been somewhere where the tumor went away on the skin, but then spread to the lungs. But think about it. Biological terrain? You bet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably from
mm-hmm.
chemical exposure. She didn't have a lot of emotional
mm-hmm.
issues at all.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't
wow.
test for emotions. It was
mm-hmm.
chemical toxicity. But think about the biological terrain in this woman. You know, she was growing cancers everywhere.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It's very interesting. So, yes, you do need to treat the biological terrain, and all of the doctors in here agree that cancers grow in acidic environments, so alkalization of the body is very important, and you can do that through alkaline water, alkaline diets, and something I like called buffer pH. You just measure urine pH and then take enough buffer pH during the day to make it alkaline. And then not having sugar. You can talk a little bit about what sugar does to cancer.
Sugar makes the it basically feeds the cancer cells, and then as you mentioned, when you have an acidic body, then the cancer cells can flourish. And you know, one thing that is really important that helps to alkalinize the body, in addition to drinking alkaline water and having the alkaline diet, is to take minerals, because when your body's
yep.
acidic, then it leaches minerals out of the bones to neutralize the acids. And so
mm-hmm.
You want to have a bunch of minerals. right. And so if you have enough minerals, then, you know, you can to neutralize all the acids. Number one, then you don't get mineral depleted. And your body needs the minerals, obviously, to keep your immune system strong. But then it helps, that also helps to keep your body alkaline. But, yeah, sugar in any form, whether that comes from grains or especially high glycemic fruits. And I'm not saying all fruit is bad. You know, it really depends on the person. But if you're eating a lot of things that have that break down as carbohydrate in the body, not just table sugar, then you can be setting yourself up for cancer. Especially, I mean, I think there are people that can eat grains or they can eat fruit, but in general, you know, if you're susceptible, which a lot of us are these days, you know, you want to focus away from things that are that have a lot of sugar in them. So whether that's natural sugar or otherwise.
Yeah, one of the doctors in here was talking about the blood type and how that it should affect the diet. You know, people with O blood types needed to eat more meat. People with A blood type should stay away from red meat. And then he had some observations on what kinds of these patterns would predispose people to cancer. I found that very interesting. Do you remember which doctor that was?
You know, to be honest, I can't remember who spoke about that, but the blood type, I'm not sure that I actually agree with that, because you're only looking at one aspect of the chemistry. I more believe in the kind of the metabolic type diet, which is something that Dr. William Donald Kelly, a dentist in the 1950s, proposed, and he treated a lot of cancer patients, and he found that there were people that, you know, everyone had different dietary needs depending on their metabolic type. And so he said there were some people that were more predisposed to be meat eaters, other people more disposed to be vegetarians. And, and it depended on a really wide variety of factors. In fact, he's got a questionnaire. It takes about 3 hours to answer because there are just really hundreds of questions about not only, about your personal characteristics and your chemistry, your preferences, lots of things. And Dr. Nick Gonzalez in New York, who treats cancer using pancreatic enzymes, also has found that there's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all diet for everyone. Of course, there are certain principles that we all need to look at, like, well, you know, nobody should be eating lots of sugar. You know, no one should be eating GMO processed food. But beyond kind of the general guidelines of healthy eating, he finds that his patients need, he's got 10 different diets, for example, and he found that every patient needs a somewhat different diet. And so, I mean, I think the blood type can have some merit, but you have to look at what else is going on in the body it's like I'm a type.
Yeah, I agree. The blood type's just like an example, though. I mean, Dr. Gonzalez, I had him on the radio show several times, and he really has taken this to the best thing. And I just wanted to read something for the listeners here that is in his section. He says, I find, for instance, that vegetarians need different supplements than meat eaters. Vegetarians tend to do well with potassium, magnesium, lots of B vitamins, and vitamin C. They don't do well with vitamin E. Meat eaters have great results with calcium, zinc, selenium, and vitamin E, but don't do well when they take magnesium, potassium. And they also don't do well with most B vitamins except B12 and a few others, large doses of vitamin C and D, chromium, whereas vegetarians tend to do well with the latter minerals. So he's really done a lot of really great research into which diet would be best for which patient. Like you said, he has 10 different diets, so but he really has observed very well what people need. And it's not, you know, like some people are promoting the raw food diet for all cancer patients, and that just isn't going to work because people can do raw food. Now, some people do raw food and their cancers disappear because there it's enzymes. And, I mean, sometimes that's all they need to do. I mean, I've seen that. That's all they need to do is go on a raw diet and their cancer disappears. You know, but it's not all like a meat eater needs to do. Usually meat eaters are meat eaters for a reason. You know, we have our internal intuitive thing is that we need meat because we come from that genetic background. Eskimos eat huge amounts of fat and things, and then other people, other tribes just eat vegetables and fruits and fiber. They don't do hardly any meat at all, but they're two different genetic types of people.
Right, and you know, Dr. Cowden and I, we wrote a book also called Foods That Fit a Unique You, and it's based on just that premise that you have to look at different things. And so you have the metabolic, the person's metabolic type, but then you also have their current health condition, because Dr. Kelly always said that a person's metabolic type can change according to where they're at in life, according to their mm-hmm. health condition. And, you know, and so he says people that are carbohydrate types that need a lot of plant-based food can become meat-eater types if they contract a certain type of condition. And there are different mm-hmm. cancers, you know, like Dr. Gonzalez has found that some cancers respond that you can, you know, there's sort of this overall belief that sugar feeds all cancers, which is probably mm-hmm. true, but there are also a few cancers that can get fed by protein, by animal
right.
protein. And so it depends also even on the type of cancer that you may have, according
yeah,
to him anyway.
Yeah, a long time ago, Warburg, I think he got the Nobel Prize for discovering that cancer cells are in anaerobic metabolism, not aerobic metabolism. So that mm-hmm. is the basis of a lot of cancer therapies, ozone therapy, insulin potentiation therapy. In other words, just the fact that cancer cells have a different metabolism than normal cells do allows clever doctors to figure out how to target cancer cells for destruction while leaving normal cells relatively alone. And
mm-hmm.
The book
mm-hmm.
is full of doctors, by the way, that are doing insulin potentiation therapy, which is giving the patient enough insulin to lower the blood sugar so that the cancer cells preferentially take in the chemotherapy, and the chemotherapy is at a very small dose compared to regular chemotherapy, but the cancer cell sucks up the chemotherapy, and it kills the cancer cells without killing the regular
mm-hmm.
cells. And that's
yeah,
a very clever
yeah.
clever thing based on Warburg's principle of the kind of metabolism that cancer cells have. And then there's this other
sure.
thing that's fascinating about the stem cells, you know, that cancer
yeah.
cells are leftover embryonic cells or stem cells that go berserko and start growing like the placenta and the baby do. You know, they just start
mm-hmm.
growing out of control very, very fast, like tropoblastic cells do. And that pancreatic enzymes are what can modulate that and cause them to revert back to normal.
Right.
You know, a whole
yep.
science of that. And then
mm-hmm.
a lot of these doctors are saying that they're getting really good results with some of the stem cell therapies that, of course, are not legal in the U.S. yet, but you can go to clinics around the world and get them. So even stem
sure.
cells can be used to modulate cancer
mm-hmm.
if you
mm-hmm.
understand the biology of cancer, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, and on that note, you know, Dr. Kolb, I thought I'd mention something about the stem cells that's interesting, and not stem cell therapy per se, but just the idea, well, you know, one of the issues of conventional medicine is that there's no chemo drug that can kill cancer stem cells. And I know this is kind of veering into another topic, but I think this is really important
mm-hmm.
for people to hear because, you know, there is no chemo drug that will kill cancer stem cells. And so that's one reason why natural therapies can be really effective, because when they're given in an IPT format, you know, intravenously, then they can go after those cancer stem cells because those are what give rise to, you know, new tumors in the body, and you want to get rid of those.
Right.
And that's like one reason why there's a, you know, chemo and radiation are limited
mm-hmm.
in their effectiveness.
Yeah, yeah. Then there's one other thing we need to talk about. Not the only place in the book it's talked about is magnet therapy, and they didn't really go into it quite the way they probably should go into it. But if you turn the nucleus of a cancer cell negative, if the cancer is within the body, it'll disappear. And if it's on the outside of the body, it'll start to, you know, disintegrate, undergo necrosis.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that people need to know. And so that's probably why electromagnetics cause cancer, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah,
yeah, I mean, because it can cause the nucleus of the cell to become positive, and that reverts it to cancer, but then unreverting it is negative. So that needs to be studied as well. And, you know, we didn't talk
yeah,
at all about the politics of all of this, but
mm-hmm.
obviously
mm-hmm.
I know doctors who were curing cancer right and left using electromagnetic therapy, and they were inducted into the CIA and told not to share their information with anybody. But,
oh,
of course,
yeah.
the people in the CIA, like the head of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and some other people, were their patients, okay? So, you know, the privileged in the government can get access to these treatments, but other people can't. But, you know, it's well known that electromagnetics manipulation and electromagnetic field manipulation can cure cancer. So,
absolutely.
But that is being actively suppressed. So, as are many other therapies. Probably because anything that works too well is going to be suppressed. So.
And I don't know enough about it.
You know, I don't personally know enough about it to do it. So I'm not. I can't tell you how to do it. But I just know that was something that, according to at least one doctor who was doing it, worked very well.
Absolutely. Well, and I just would, if I could tag on real quick about the magnetic thing, I was using magnets on my shoulders, and I actually developed and I never actually found out what kind it was. I developed a type of skin cancer because I was not using the magnets properly. And, because magnets are
polarity. Magnet therapy has to be done with care. That's right.
Yeah, very. And I
That's
learned
right.
the hard way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, just, yeah, that can be a big deal. So
it can be. It can be. Well, this is a great book. It talks about, you know, all of the different anti-cancer therapies that have been maligned, you know, like Laetril and Ukraine and a lot of the other therapies that anybody with cancer really ought to research, because depending on the type of cancer you have and the type of these natural therapies are very, very non-toxic and often can be used in conjunction with chemotherapy or other cancer therapies. So I think it's just up to the person to research everything that's out there.
Yeah,
and I would recommend using applied kinesiology or the Zyto machine or some other like the electrodermal screening machine to choose the therapies that are going to be most effective.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. Because there are different, no two agents are going to work for the same people. And, you know, people can do things also like if they can afford it, the RGCC testing in Greece, which will where you can test your cancer for what agents it's going to respond to. It analyzes it for 50 different cancer therapies. Mm-hmm. And so it can be effective. But, you know, it's a little more expensive, and so it sounds like you have some less expensive modalities for people. But in Defeat Cancer, we talk about a number of those different tests, including, I think, applied kinesiology. So just depends on who you're seeing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'm sure that it seems to me, after reading the book, that probably the majority of your doctors in here do some form of applied kinesiology or the equivalent with a machine, but they're not going to talk about it. They're not going to talk about it in the book.
That's the other thing.
That's the impression I got, because people who don't understand energetic medicine are not going to understand how that works. And, you know, as they said, as one of the doctors said when I interviewed him, I've been bleeding on the cutting edge for years, you know. Many of the doctors in your book have had their medical license revoked. They've had to fight, you know, to fight medical boards and all sorts of other attacks on them, FDA attacks and everything, I'm sure. But I'll say something of your doctors. They're all very optimistic. They're very caring, compassionate people. Mm-hmm. Many of them have had cancer, some even metastatic cancer, that they recovered from. So they've walked the road before of cancer. And, it's just a remarkable group of people. And just to let people know where they are, Brzezinski's in Houston, clinics in Germany, Zive is in Prescott, Arizona. Nicholas Gonzalez, and we share a couple of patients. I really like Dr. Gonzalez. He's in New York.
Yeah.
He's trained in oncology. Many of these people are trained in oncology.
Oh,
Huber
yeah.
is a naturopath in Temple, Arizona. Winkler is Genesis Health System in Oceanside, California. Keith Scott Mumby is in Reno, Nevada. Joel Brown is a naturopath in Tempe, Arizona. Constantine Kutsanis, I share patients with him too, is in Grapevine, Texas. Chad Is it Ashton?
Ashton.
Ashton. Naturepath is in Seattle. Robert Esslinger is in Reno. Martin Dayton is in Sunny Isle Beach, Florida. Julian Kenyon is in London. Elio Rivera Selena is in Mexico. And Stephen Hines is in Mexico. So, and in Mexico, they can do things like whole body hyperthermia and all sorts of stuff that we can't do here in the U.S.
They can't do here.
And yeah, so there's an advantage to being out of. And I know that Dr. Bergeron, who I helped found Avatar Cancer Center with me in 1999, he's still up in Roswell, and he's gone all over the world. He's gone to Parsalis in Switzerland and to Mexico and to Belize and to Bahamas and everywhere. And he basically is helped educate me of all the things that are going on outside the country. Because, you know, otherwise, if you don't go and watch them and see what they're doing, these clinics are proprietary. You know, they're not going to be publishing their information, and they're not going to be sharing their information because they have proprietary treatments that they developed.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been a wealth of information because, of course, he's actually gone. I don't have the time nor the money to visit all these clinics. But, of course, I do the radio show interviews. I've interviewed probably 35 of these doctors all over the world, including Hulda Clark, who actually risked being arrested. She came over across the Mexican border to do my interview because she didn't trust the phone lines in Mexico. And she's one that showed how many of the organs that get cancer had their energy lowered by parasites. And so she was into parasite treatment. And I'm going to say this right out. If you have ever eaten raw fish, sushi, or salad bars in a restaurant, and you're 40 years old, you ought to muscle test to see if you need parasite treatment. And the three drugs are praziquantel, ivermectin, and albendazole. None of these drugs are very toxic. You have to support liver and kidney function and drink a lot of water, and we give Renopath and some, you know, milk thistle to protect the organs when you're on them. But we want to wipe out these parasites so that you don't get... I think that all these solid tumors in the 70s and 80s, because they don't tend to be emotional then, I think parasites... I think she was absolutely right. I think parasites are a big problem, but it may take 30 or 40 years for these parasites to cause problems.
Right, you're right. Absolutely.
And they're asymptomatic. You don't know you have them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
I had nathostomiasis from eating lox and bagels at Einstein Brothers. And I had 110 of them in my body. They don't reproduce, but they did try to cause lung cancer in me. They were gathering in one place in my lung, and that doctor I told you that was in the CIA, he used electromagnetic energy to break up the parasites. Now, I know I had 110 of them because they migrated to the surface and caused things that were like large bug bites. They actually came out. But I was on 9 months of ivermectin, albendazole, and praziquantel, rotating it until I got rid of 110 of them. Yeah. So when I tell people that they ought to do this, it's because I almost developed cancer from parasites. Okay.
Yeah, parasites are a big deal.
Very
they
scary.
Cause a lot of problems.
That's right. So all of these things are pretty easy to do. You know, you're 40 or 50. You've got good health insurance. Blue Cross Blue Shield paid for all of these anti-parasitic medicines. I mean, it's just a copay. It's no big deal. And you could probably decrease your risk of getting cancer later in life by over 50%.
Absolutely.
These are things that people need to know.
Absolutely.
Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give the contact information for your book and for yourself, for your other book?
Yeah, sure. And I just want to say, Dr. Cole, thank you so much for having me. It's just really so much fun
talking
to you about these different health issues. And for the listeners, my website is conniestrasheim.com. Last name is strasheim.com. The book that we were just talking about is Defeat Cancer. And you can also find that at cancerbooksource.com.
Connie, I want to invite you and Dr. Cowden back on the show. Last time I interviewed, I think I interviewed Dr. Cowden on the first book in the series. The other books weren't out yet. But if you want to get in touch with Amber here and get us the other books, we could have you both on at the same time if you wanted.
Oh, sure. I will. Thank you so much for that. I would love to do that, and I'm sure he would as well. So I'll let him know, and I guess we can be in touch with you then.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. We've been interviewing Connie Strausheim on her fabulous book, Defeat Cancer, 15 Doctors of Integrative and Naturopathic Medicine Tell You How. I can tell you from running a cancer clinic here, Avatar Cancer Center, since 99, these doctors are a wealth of information, and information that anybody, I don't care whether you have cancer or not, I think one-third of the population is going to develop cancer. This is a good book to read now so you can help prevent cancer, because Connie, as you know, it's a lot easier to prevent cancer than it is to treat it once it's there.
That's
so
right.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it really
is. Thank you,
so
Dr. Cole.
Well, you take care, and hopefully we'll have you back on soon with Dr. Cowden.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. Next week, we are going to be interviewing Garnett Schulzhauser, Dancing Forever with Spirit. And then Dr. Jim Roach is coming on God's House Calls, Finding God Through My Patients. Then Mark Anthony is going to be on for Evidence of Eternity, Communicating with Spirits for Proof of the Afterlife. Mark Anthony is a very accomplished attorney who is also a medium and presents the scientific evidence for communicating with spirits after they pass on. It's an interesting book. Anyway, we're here every week at noon. Please tune in next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.